You're listening to a highlight from the Yishai Fleisher Show on Voice of Israel.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show here on Voice of Israel, broadcasting live to the world from Jerusalem. You're a part of it wherever you are. We are in the midst of this incredible season. This is the season of holidays. It's the other holidays. You know the regular holiday season, the high holiday season. Well, this isn't the high holiday season. This is the underground holiday season. This is the low-down holiday season, because in this holiday season, we have Israel Independence Day, where it's blood, sweat, and tears. And we have coming up soon is Yom Yerushalayim, the other end of Independence Day's Jerusalem Day, when the heart gets completed. And we have amazing spiritual holidays and religious holidays that are like, they're like English, they're like English on a cue ball. They're like just a different spin on things, just a tad of a different outlook on things. And in order to enter and glide into submerge into this amazing holiday season, we have none other than our beloved spiritual cafe with Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Yishai. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. I'm glad you're here. I'm so happy you're here, and I'm so happy that we're getting into spiritual things. I always feel this is the way to cleanse the week. I cleanse my palate. Okay, I literally cleanse my palate when we talk about Torah at the end of the week. It makes everything so worth it, because we talk about the spiritual DNA of this world, and you, of course, are the educational director of Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov, which is found in beautiful Nachlaot, Jerusalem. And it has been, haven't these days been gorgeous? It's really the beautiful season here in Israel.
It's phenomenal spring. It's phenomenal. I mean, the storm at the end of last week and now everything just beautiful and green and warm. I think I'm actually ready for summer.
Yes, summer's here. You know why you're ready for summer?
Why is that?
Because we have been sated by winter.
Thank God.
To say, it was not a hungry winter.
It was not.
It was satiating. Sating, I don't know. But the bottom line is I feel like ready for summer, because I got my, I'm ready for dinner because I had my drink. That's the kind of thing.
I love it that when we shift in our prayers from asking that God give us, tain tal matal libracha, give us rain and dew as a blessing, that's our winter, request. And now in the summer we just say, just give us the blessing. And I always feel like that means because we've already gotten what we need, and now we just have to give ourselves space to grow.
Rabbi Mike Foyer, we are about to, this Sunday, we're about to enjoy a very unique holiday. And not only is it unique, it's kind of hidden.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, if you asked a kindergartner in Israel, if what's the holiday that's coming up, they may not know it. And yet it's a biblical holiday, one that a whole story is written about. And that is what I like to call P2. Or Pesach Sheni, or Second Passover. And the meaning of that is that a few Jews, Israelites, came to Moses and said, we weren't able to offer up the Paschal lamb, the Paschal sacrifice, in its time, because we were ritually impure at the time for having encountered a dead body and having touched it. And we had spiritual impurity. We weren't able to bring the Paschal lamb in its proper time, because we were impure, and we are not mandated to do so, because if you miss a commandment because you were kind of forced into it, then you're forgiven automatically. But they said, we want a second chance, and Moses called up to God, and God came down with a message saying, yeah, you know what? They yearn for it, and they get a second chance holiday, which is called Pesach Sheni. And those people who were ritually impure have another opportunity to give the Paschal lamb on Pesach Sheni. And I don't think there's anything else like this in the whole Torah, that you get like another kind of like a holiday, like a makeup, like we call it in Israel, Moed Bet, like a second opportunity to do something that you missed. In Israel, if you fail the test, you get to take it again and fix it up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything built into the structure that way. I mean, as you pointed out, there is an understanding of the limits of the human capacity. So missed opportunities aren't always lost, but this is in many ways sort of an a priori building in of a second chance. And what does it say to you?
Well, what I always hear is people say to me, it's the second chance holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to people, one aspect of it is that God gives you a second chance. You messed up, you get a second chance. That's true.
Sure.
But there's another aspect of it. And that aspect is, let's think about the people who are like, I want to get that thing that I missed. I want to be closer to you, God. I yearn for more commandments and more things. For example, a Jew says to me, it's not a commandment to live in the land of Israel. I say to them, think about Pesach Sheni, about Second Passover, when they were like, can we please get a little closer to you, God? Can we have another thing upon us? You don't have to live in the land of Israel. Maybe. Maybe you don't. But like, if you yearn to get closer to him, capital H, then you're like, yeah, I'll do anything. Can I beg you to let me? I'm knocking at the door. That's what Pesach Sheni says to me.
So what I hear in that is it's not about the technical act. It's about the relationship. That maybe what we're learning here is that, you know, if you miss an opportunity for a technical act, either it's a lost opportunity and it doesn't come back, or perhaps it wasn't even so critical. But when it comes to desire for relationship, then God has built into the Torah the notion that if what you want is relationship, I'm always there for you. I think it's very beautiful.
And that you should be asking for more. If you have a chance to wear the blue strings on your tzitzit, ask for more. If you got a chance to go up to the Temple Mount, ask for more. You got a chance to live in the land of Israel, yearn for more. Like say, God, I want to get, what could I do? Can I like jump a hurdle here so that I can get closer to you? And it's, you know, and that's the, why did God grant them this thing? Why did he have to give him? He didn't have to give them the second chance holiday, but they were like, hey, you know, we want in. We want in on the story. And I find so many people who want a way out. Sure. They want to look at the rabbis and say the rabbis aren't okay, and that they invented the religion in the Second Temple, or this stuff is fuddy-duddy, or this is all kinds of, you know, intellectual ways to just to check out.
I mean, it's not just that. I mean, that I think is an extreme, but I see many people who consider themselves to be religious who basically wake up in the morning with a checklist of all the things that need to be done in order to fulfill my obligation to God. And, you know, when I'm done with the checklist, I get to go play ball. You know, I get to do the things I really want to do. And it's tragic, because what happens is that one's religious life becomes sort of a dry structure which lacks a beating heart. And this is what I hear in Pesach Sheni, and this is what I hear you saying, is that if a person lives a life of desire to be close to God, then the idea of missing such a fundamental act of covenant, right, the national covenant with God, is embodied in the Pesach offering, in the Paschal Lamb, right? And to miss something like that isn't just to you know, I didn't get to do a simple act. It's to fail to realize your relationship on a new level, and that you can't just let go. And I hear what you're saying. We need more desire to be close to God. I think it's actually what's missing deeply from our society.
I think what you've added also, and I didn't think about this earlier, is that there's also an element of them wanting to be part of the nation and the national covenant.
I'm sure that's what it says in the text. They say, well, why should we lose out? Everybody else was there. You know, the sages say, well, what were these guys doing? The sages say that they were carrying the bones of Joseph, right? That the last thing that Moses does before he leaves Egypt, he says, wait a minute, we made a promise to Joseph as a people that when we leave Egypt, when God takes us out, we're going to bring his bones with us. These people said, great, we'll carry them. And they come to Moses and said, hey, man, we're carrying the promise. We're carrying the past. We're doing a duty on behalf of the people. You're telling me from some technical reason that we get excluded? Well, I'm going to tell you something. I don't want to be excluded. I'm willing to carry the burden of the past and to do the dirty work, but I want my opportunity to be close to God together with the people. Because it's not a private covenant. You know, the parallel here is the fact that, you know, the circumcision is done on the eighth day. And that's the ideal moment. But you know when you're supposed to do it if you miss the eighth day? Every single moment. So every single moment is an obligation. In the same way, because it's individual, it's moment by moment. But in the national, we work on a calendar, which is fixed by the moon and the sun, and because there needs to be a national movement to it. And that's what these people are saying. They're saying, we want to be together with the nation in service of God.
Pesach Sheni is a hidden holiday, and one of the customs, by the way, is to eat matzah.
I got mine waiting.
You're ready to go, right?
I'm ready to go.
Pesach Sheni, it's a beautiful holiday, and it's also one of these holidays that reveals itself to you when you study Torah, and I want to talk about a painful topic just for 3 minutes here with you, which is a commandment. You talked about the every opportunity to do the circumcision if you missed the time. There is one commandment which so many of us fail, and I find myself failing it, and that is the prohibition against bitul Torah, the prohibition against wasting time and not studying the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
it is endemic in Western society to waste time and not study Torah.
Yes.
And studying Torah is understanding the inner will of God. And how do we... maybe I just want you to say a few words maybe about this concept of Bitul Torah, which is wasting the opportunity for Torah, which never comes back. And it is a cardinal type sin. I don't know if that's the right word for it.
I mean, it is. You know, I was once taught that the phrase of killing time, according to the Torah, is suicide. Right? Because you really don't have anything else. If you ask yourself, what do I have in life? I've got time and I've got relationships. Right? And the two come together, at least between man and God, in the Torah, because the Torah is God's thoughts on man. And I think the greatest cause of Bitul Torah, I think there are two and they're parallel. One is people don't understand. They've received from someone else at some point in their education a notion of what learning Torah is. Like, you went to high school. Did you ever read any great works of literature?
Sure.
Did you hate them or love them?
Love them.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
But you
surely know the phenomenon of many people that were forced to read,
yes,
you know, Dostoevsky, yes, or Tolstoy or some of the greats, and they walk away thinking, oh, that was terrible.
It's just funny you ask me that, because that happened to be that throughout my whole life, that literature class, I loved it.
Great.
That was always for me like the...
But you understand my point, is that many people are walking around with the impression that the educational system gave them as opposed to something which they acquired for themselves.
Right.
That's number one. You have to acquire for yourself what it is to learn Torah. And the parallel to that, or how you know when you've done it, is the sages taught us, Ein Adam Lomed, El B'makom Shelibo Chafetz Bo. A person cannot learn except that which their heart desires. You have to find the piece of the Torah, the face of the Torah, the aspect that draws your desire. And I think that there are certain standards of what Torah learning is out there in the world, and what's the proper way to do it, and what are its gold standards that are preventing many people from investing more time. But I think you also put your finger on the other problem, which is we live in a culture that has perfected distraction. Right? We live in a culture that does not want us to think deeply, does not want us to look into ourselves. And therefore, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're getting phone calls while we're talking to our friends, while we're riding on the bus, while we're writing a note. We're doing 8 things at once. You know, there are studies that tell you today that the human being cannot multitask. Multitasking, by definition, means I'm doing 2 things as well as I could do them separately. We semi-task. We're doing lots of stuff, not as well as we could. The power of learning Torah is being completely focused on what one is doing.
And being present, and mm-hmm. and then the reward, the richness of getting into God's mind. Mm-hmm. That's what Torah is. You can't say it less than that. It's like you're really getting into His inner will, and that's something that we definitely cannot waste that opportunity. And that goes for everybody out there who's listening. We all can get strengthened in our commandment to watch out for Bitul Torah and instead spend every moment that we can getting into God's head, because that's actually the purpose of this world. Rabbi Mike, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back. We're going to talk about the Jewish calendar, and we're going to talk about the blasphemer. We'll be right back, so stay tuned.
I think our security is at great risk because there's a real danger that we could lose this election.
Following months of election campaigns, weeks of coalition negotiations, and plenty of spin, Israel's next government is about to be formed.
My priority is to be in the opposition.
Tune in for Newsroom VOI for all the latest developments, exclusive interviews, and more.
He's going to reach out to the left as he's done last time and the time before.
This is Raoul Wootliff, Voice of Israel's political correspondent. Tune in live every Sunday on Voice of Israel.com.
Matthias, son of Deuteronomy of Gath.
Do I say yes?
Yes.
Yes.
You have been found guilty by the elders of the town of uttering the name of our Lord, and so as a blasphemer, you are to be stoned to death.
All right, folks, we're back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show, and we are learning Torah and getting ready for Shabbat with Rabbi Mike Foyer on Spiritual Cafe, and we'll be talking about the Torah's story of the blasphemer, not no T there, blasphemer, and that was a little clip from Life of Brian, which always kind of puts a smile on my face. It's all right to make fun of ourselves a little bit, still understanding how holy and amazing the Torah is, and basically in the book of Leviticus, in Vayikra, Parshat Emor, the Torah portion of Emor, that's 24:10. It says that the son of an Israelite woman went out, and he was the son of an Egyptian man among the children of Israel. They fought in the camp, and the son of the Israelite woman and an Israelite man. Two people fought. The son of the Israelite woman pronounced the name and blasphemed. So they brought him to Moses. The name of his mother was Shlomit, daughter of Divri, the son of the tribe of Dan. They placed him under guard to clarify for themselves through Hashem. And Hashem, God's name, spoke to Moses, saying, "Remove the blasphemer to the outside of the camp, and all those who heard shall lean their hands upon his head. The entire assembly shall stone him. And the children, and to the children of Israel you shall speak, saying, any man who will blaspheme his God shall bear his sin. And one who will pronounce blasphemously the name of Hashem shall be put to death. The entire assembly shall surely stone him. Proselyte and native alike, when he blasphemes the name, he shall be put to death." And the idea also of blaspheming is in the Ten Commandments itself, not to take the name of God in vain. The name of God and using it properly and not misusing it. What's that about?
I think that what we're touching on here is fundamental to what is it be a human being. So a lot of us believe we live in a world that exists outside of us, and that through our senses, we're kind of like mapping the world, right? Things come in, my eyes, my ears, my nose, yeah. And there's a world out there which is separate from me. That's not the way the Torah presents the world. The Torah says that the soul is a piece of the divine within us, and that it's essentially upwelling together with its creator and bringing a world into being. So that sounds like a bunch of highfalutin language, but you know what it has experience for most of us? In language. Right? Our ideas are embedded in the language that we speak, in the way that we imagine the world. And something as fundamental as a name is a primary mode of relationship. Right? What kind of world do I live in? Do I live in a world which has a creator? Which has a creator not only in the abstract, but a creator who cares, who reaches out, who touches the world, who gives his guidance to my behavior. That creator has a name, because a name, of course, is not necessarily essential to the person. It's what I call them, right? A name, by definition, a name implies there's someone calling, right? It implies the relationship.
Implies another.
And that's really the core, I think, in understanding this commandment, is that someone who so profoundly violates the relationship between the creator and the creation as to take that name and degrade it, right, has basically removed themselves from existence as we know it. Hmm. We see this in our world today, that there's so little shared ground. There's so little shared understanding that, you know, in the wealthy countries we can get by because people are going to fragment off into their little individualistic worlds, and there's enough resource to mostly cover the problems. Of course, as we see in America today, there's plenty of lack out there as well. But here in the Middle East, where the pressure is high, the fact that we can't all agree on what world we're living in, we're calling God by different names, or we're denying that there is a God at all, is allowing the more base part of the human being to take over.
I think another way of blaspheming is also doing evil in the name of God. That's a type of blaspheming as well.
Absolutely, because what it is...
It's not clear. Maybe that was what he blasphemed. It's not exactly clear.
It's not clear at all what he did.
There are people here that in the name of Allah are doing unspeakable things. Yesterday in a cab, an Arab cab driver told me, "I can't believe what's being done in the name of Allah."
Right.
And in the name of Islam,
right.
You know, like in the name of, you know, God. And in fact, another biblical story is that Shimon and Levi, mm-hmm. were two of the heads of the tribes, went in and they killed the town of Shechem, the townsmen of Shechem, because they violated their sister. And Jacob was very upset at them. And some people don't understand why was Jacob so upset at them, because they did, you know, they defended their sister's honor. But really, my friend came up with a very important idea, which he said he was upset that they were using the name of God, because what they were doing is they said, become more religious, become closer to God, circumcise yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that as a ruse. He's like, never use the name of God as a way to kill and destroy. Never use the higher ideal. If you want to ruse a different way, that's one thing. If you want to fight them, you know, straight out, that's another thing. But don't say come closer to godliness and then use that as a way to destroy them. The godliness is not you can't say the name of Allahu Akbar and then go and murder people for no reason. That's not godliness. That is blaspheming.
That's one of the great dangers I believe that we face in this country today. You know, the original founders of this country had no great love for God. most of them. And therefore, their actions, like you said, we're not really in the name of God. But we have, thank God, a rising new mode of leadership and a young cohort of very motivated people who are coming up who do see themselves as acting in the name of God. And on one hand, it's a tremendous opportunity to sanctify the name of heaven. On the other hand, I have a lot of worry that once we actually step forward, which is our proper role in the world, to represent the name of God, that the stakes, it's like doubling down on, are we really serious about what's happening? Are we going to be another secular nation state, a refuge for a persecuted people? Fine, you're going to do what you need to do. And that's what we've done up to now. Are we going to be a light to the nations? Are we going to actually sanctify creation, which is ultimately our mission? Are we going to claim the name of God as our own, so to speak? Then we better make sure that what we're doing, as you said, is true and honest and for the sake of all creation.
And the issues of language, mm-hmm. awareness of language, the language that you use in front of your children, getting upset and cursing, expressing anger. These are looked down upon in Judaism. Language is holy.
Mm-hmm.
The words that come out of your mouth are counted. Anger is looked down upon, and the sense that you get from the story of the blasphemer is that he lost control.
Mm-hmm.
Judaism values control, not a type of asceticism, not a repression, but overcome anger, overcome haughtiness, see your role, your proper role in the world. That's what this is. This is a story of haughtiness, and he by blaspheming the name of God, it was like he was above God, or his moment was above God, his anger was above God.
Yeah, well, we value, I don't know if I would say we value control as much as I would say we value consciousness. I mean, there should be a consciousness of action, and it's expressed in control. But, you know, one of the problems of denying the name of God and destroying that shared framework that we're all children of the Creator is we see in modern justice systems. Today, what's the reason that people do the right thing? It might be because they're like happy, normal people and they don't care, but a lot of it is a fear of punishment. The problem with fear of punishment as an incentive for doing what's right is that as soon as you're willing to do the time, then you're willing to do the crime, and there's no reason not to. The idea of valuing the name of God, of taking an oath, feeling bound by your word because you believe that your oath binds you to the Creator, means that you create a higher shared consciousness, which is really driving you. Not a fear of punishment, but an aspiration of actually what the world could be if we all lived in the name of God.
And then finally, there's also the issue of societal law.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, listen, hey, this is between you and God and you. You curse God, God take care of it. You know, it's you said something mean about God, not about society. You blasphemed his name. Let him take care of it. No. Here the request is society. You've got to police yourself. You've got to govern yourself. You've got to excise this dark root within you.
Well, yes, although this is also where Monty Python diverges from reality. Because we know that the sages' attitude on these types of commandments were the absolute word of God and their unwillingness to claim to represent absolute truth in the world. They were on a quest. And that's why Jewish law is called halakha. Right? It's the act of going. Right? The sages were unwilling to assert the death penalties that the Torah commands, you know, because they knew that they couldn't be representatives of God in the world in a perfect sense. By the way, they came up with other death penalties. You know this? Ones that aren't in the Torah, those were meant to maintain the social fabric. Because the reality is humanity is a little bit nasty and brutish in its state of nature. So they need that. But they did not claim to be the perfect representatives of God in the world.
Important stuff, important stuff. And it's all found in this week's Torah portion, including a whole list of the holidays. The whole year calendar is in this week's Torah portion. It's I think it's also very good for teaching. It's good for teaching the children. It's a good tool, this week's Torah portion and more. Go through the holidays and through the cycle of the year with your kids. It's a great way to test them. It's a great way to talk about it. I'm looking forward to this Shabbat because of that. Rabbi Mike Foyer, I want to wish you a fantastic, blessed year of holidays. An awesome Pesach Sheni. May we both get that second chance and also show that we yearn for that closeness to God. That's what the story of Second Passover is, and that's coming up this Sunday. And I want to wish everybody out there a Shabbat Shalom, a blessed Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
And from here in beautiful Jerusalem with its beautiful weather right now, we call out to you and say, be part of the story. Smile. Think about Jerusalem in your heart. Say L'chaim with a bottle of wine from the land of Israel and the waters that Elijah the prophet drank from, and maybe we'll drink from again. All right, folks. God bless you, all of you out there. Rabbi Mike, thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Yishai.
And shalom.
Voice of Israel, your source for news and views on everything Israel and the Middle East.